My name is Bet O'Keefe. I'm from Ballygrin in Listowel. I'm bred and born and reared here. This is my father's land, actually, where I built my house, and where I built it in 1967. I married my wife in 1968, and we're here since. That's basically it. And we have two kids. Well, we've got kids now. They're adults, Juliet and Gordon, and they're... Actually, Gordon is upstairs. He works from home, but he's down on holidays. So that's basically it.
So you were literally Listowel from the day you were
from
born?
From the day I was born, yeah. I went to school in a place called Durrandab over in Dwabert. I went to school through the fields without any shoes, like, and I was only 4.5 years of age. Like, but if you sent a child to school now without shoes, you would be arrested. But like we had that. There were rough times at that time, like in... they had a farm, obviously, like, and we used to deliver milk around the stall as well, around the town, you know, liquid milk. But there was no pasteurising that him, just...
You strong stomachs, though.
Oh, you needed it, yeah. But, like, that's what went on that him. There was no pasteurising plant, like, at all. And then I went to college in 1959. It was after seeing Sive, like... That was my first play of seeing. Yeah. I was captivated by it, you know.
What was it about Sive?
Sive was about, like, it was the Listowel Drama Group that put it on, like. They were always putting on plays by George Fitzmaurice and other writers, like, you know. They put on the play of the Western World as well, and they did a few George Fitzmaurice's, the Moonlighters and the Magic Glasses and all those plays. He was born over there in Douai, George Fitzmaurice. He worked in Dublin in the civil service. And... he wrote plays, like, and the drama group put him on. Now, Brian McMahon and Eamon Kelly. Eamon Kelly was teaching in the Listowel Technical School down the Shanachie. And he was a woodwork teacher. And himself and Brian McMahon, they formed the Listowel Drama Group in the early 50s. And I met Eamon Kelly above in Dublin one night, after the Abbey Theatre finally accepted John B. as a playwright, because they refused to take Sive, like, you know, but the public opinion. So Eamon Kelly was in the field, so I was talking to him after in the bar in the Abbey, and he said to me, "I was teaching in Listowel in the technical school. I'm teaching there now," I said, "in the vocational school." I said, "Just changed to the vocational school," and he said, "I had to go cycle to Tarbert every Monday night to do night classes on a common bicycle and cycle back to Listowel again when the night classes were over." Oh, 12 goodness. Miles, like.
You'd fit legs, so.
And he had to carry his stuff on the bar of the bike, like, and the carrier, saws and things like that, whatever equipment he was doing, like.
Wow.
All he had was a flash lamp on the bike, like, with a battery on it, like, you know. That was rough going, like, you know.
I suppose.
He was working for the Kerry VEC that time, like. And then he went off to Dublin, he did the Shanachie, and he showed the rest is history, like, you know. He turned into acting then, like, and his wife was an actress also, like, you know, so.
Had they not formed, would you have gotten into kind of plays?
No, it was John B's play. I was at the opening night in the Las Vegas in Listowel, and the drama group, they did an absolute magnificent production of Sive. And the audience were captivated, like. It was, and John B was a new writer, like, that time. It was David Carroll that produced it. And he took a gamble with John B, and sure, the rest is history then. They went on the circuit that year, and then went into onto the finals in Athlone, and sure, that won hands down. They won the competition hands down. And after that, like, the whole country was fascinated by Sive. The story was kind of an old man, like, marrying a young girl, like, against her will, like, you know. In other words, she didn't want to marry him at all. But that was the case in Ireland that time, as you know yourself. There was matchmaking going on wholesale, and girls didn't meet their husbands, like, until maybe a week before they got married. So it's hard to imagine. There was no such thing as love, and if there was anything to tell about love, they had to go to England. That was it. There was no, the father's mother. There was a fortune to be brought, like, and money to be changed hands, and there was no love at all involved in it, like. And I remember my own mother, she brought, when she married into my father's place below, she brought £500 with her in 1939. That was a lot of money in 1939. £500. Anyway, that's the story. So the Psy was such a success then that the drama group couldn't go around the country with it because a lot of my day jobs. So there was a splinter group formed called the Listowel Players, and they went away. John B was with him himself, and they did the touring around and made money out of Sive, and that started John B on the road then, and he wrote play after play after play after that.
What and was it like watching his work?
Watching his work was, it was, the language was very strong, racy, and it was difficult North Kerry, and nobody can play John B's players like North Kerry people, because the accent is, and I've seen several productions of Sive by professional groups, and I was horrified at their accents, and you know, he scored nice summer holidays up to Lattercombe Pond. There was a matchmaker there called Dan Paddy Andy, and it was there he learned all about matchmaking now, like, and most of his stuff like was written early on, was a matchmaker, which I get on to later on, like, because Denny Hannon adapted it. But then you know yourself, Sharon's Grave and Big Maggie and the field followed. Like, no, there was no theatre in Listowel that time. Absolutely none. So the plays were either held in the boys' school or else the play as a cinema. Now, then the Protestant church in the square, you know where it is, was in kind of disrepair and in danger of being fallen down. So a committee was formed, and the Protestant community handed it over to things like, you know, and that was about, it cost almost £1 million to do it up, like, you know, and developed into a beautiful theatre, like. And then I remember the first night it opened, like, my wife produced Big Maggie there, and we did 12 nights there in a row.
In a row?
In a row, without a stop, 12 nights in a row. And then Joe Murphy, you've heard of Joe Murphy, the Vicar Joe, haven't you? He came along then, and he ran the show single-handedly for 20 years, and he retired there 2 years ago, and he still hasn't, he's only semi-retired, I'd say. But he was absolutely brilliant, and there was no toilet facilities for actors at the back, like, you know, only one dressing room. So Joe decided that we need toilet facilities and a new dressing room, and you know, there was strict planning laws available that time because you had to match in the thing with the St. John's, and the cut stone had to be the same and all, because otherwise they wouldn't get planning permission. And I think it cost about 40,000 to do it, and the money had to be borrowed. So Joe put on two plays a year, and I was part of that, like, group as well, St. John's Theatre Group, and they did plays for 20 years, two plays a year, one in the spring and one in the autumn, and cleared off the debt.
And, unbelievable.
Twas, yeah, because you see, we've got no grants at the time. They wouldn't give them to you, like, and even the people that had to sign their name for the loan, like, they just had to sign their name, and the banks wouldn't take any chance, like, you know, they were, yeah, you know yourself, like. Mm. So anyway,
but it goes to show about the commitment that they had as well to actually sign their names. To
they had,
say,
and you know, Joe was one of the signatures, and I think Noreen Buckley was the other one, and but like it was a risky business, like, you know, but like the audiences. It was a lovely theatre, like, as you know yourself, we've been there probably. Mm. And there's a lot of players going on there, like, there was four or five drama groups then in the store, like, the drama group have a thing at the bottom of their thing that the stage shall never die, and you know, they were right actually. There was a series of players put on then by the Listowel Players, by Fieldside Players, by the Larty Theatre Company that Denny Hannon formed. He started off in the square, in a stable there at the back of the Shanachie there, and there was only 50 people, 50 spaces available for people in the audience, and we did a series of plays there. I was part of that group as well, and we did a series of plays, and there was tea and biscuits at the end of the play for everybody in the audience. Which, of course, was pretty, you know, there was only 50 there, like, you know.
Yeah.
It was tea and Marietta biscuits, like.
Oh, wow.
The cheapest ones as you could get. But Danny moved into St. John's. All the groups then gravitated towards St. John's. Like, that was the
theatre. That was the place to be.
That was the place to be, like. There was no more going around halls, like that was the place to be. Mm. And we put on Sive, and we put on the Field and a few more players like that, and Big Maggie, as I said, Sharon's Grave, and all those John B players, like, and the Listowel players toured England with Sharon's Grave, and we toured England with Sive. And then Danny got an idea. Danny Hannon, he was very good actually. He put all John B's letters of Matchmaker together in a play called Match Make Me Do. And we went into Sheemsa, and we filled Sheemsa 5 nights in a row. When Martin Whelan was, Martin is dead now. He was the manager in Sheemsa at that time. And then we went to America with it. We went to San Francisco, Chicago, New York, wow. Las Vegas. We spent 4 days there.
What was it like?
It was a fascinating tour. We were in Las Vegas for the 4th of July, actually, which was Independence Day in America. See all the planes coming in, What struck me most was when we opened the door, we came out of the plane, the blasty heat, and when we were walking on the footpath, the soles of your feet were kind of hot, it was. Mm. But like, it was.
Was that the moment where you realised, I can't believe we're part of this?
Well, I suppose really we were enjoying it, because I had retired at that stage because I got sick in 1998, and I said, I packed in the teaching then because they said, there's no point. How long am I going to be around here now? I might as well enjoy myself. So we did a pilot of tours and a pilot of plays. I acted with the drama group for in The Masters, written by Brian McMahon. And he also wrote The Honey Spike. And you have a series of Listowel people. I'd say North Kerry definitely is the hub of drama, and Listowel is the centre, the epicentre. It has to be. Mm. Because when John B passed on, along came Tony Gearn, who was a protege of John B's as well, and he wrote Cuckoo Blue and a play called Solo Run. You might have heard of it. Solo Run was about the ballad singer, Sean McCarthy. He was a writer as well, and he was a balladeer. The song Step It Out Mary and all those songs.
Yeah.
He wrote them. His sister was having a baby, and she wasn't married. So she was refused. She was in labour, and she was refused entrance to the hospital in Listowel that night. And so the taxi driver drove her back to Tralee, and the hospital there wouldn't let her in either. Now, she had the baby on the way to Killarney County Home. On the side of the road, she died. The baby survived. She died. She's buried inside in Listowel. And he wrote the song In Shame, Love, In Shame,
Yeah.
And Tony Gearn wrote a play called Solo Run. It was about that incident. Well, the cannon in Listowel, when her remains were being brought into Listowel, the cannon put a chain on the gates. He wouldn't let her in into the church on the orders of the bishop. We were living in dangerous times that time. Like, there was, as John B said, there was 2 big black clouds over our head that time. One was the church and one was the state. Anyway, a taxi driver called Johnny Gearn, who was Tony Gearn's father, he cut the chain, broke the chain, and they carried her into the church. Unfortunately, the following morning, when they went to see now could they have mass for her, she was gone. The undertaker had taken her up to the graveyard on the orders of the canon and buried her above the graveyard. Her graveyard is inside by the wall in the story. I often go to see it,
She was treated like a criminal.
She was treated like a criminal. But that was the story at that time with her married mothers. Either the parents didn't want them, and they all finished up in these homes for unmarried mothers. You know what happened there? So it was a powerful play. I played the part of the canon, which was, of course, was people didn't like him. But he was under instructions from the bishop, So, and as we're talking about the bishop now, Mike O'Donnell in Tralee, he wrote a play about Jane Mansfield. She was coming to the Brandon Hotel one time to sing, and there was a band coming, and Jesus, the bishop got word of it anyway, and he ordered the parish priest and the curate now, stop this thing. I don't want this thing going ahead. This lady is, she's a painted woman. In other words, she has been in films, and there has been not sex scenes, but, you know, there's something
spicy.
Spicy scenes, if they were there now, as the man said. But anyway, she came to. There was some of the directors of the band, and that was Clifford was the one of them anyway, the Cash and Carrick Road. They went down to Shannon and collected her. And of course, the bishop instructed the parish priest to stop it. Like, and there was a big crowd of people outside the hotel marching up and down. Women with rosary beads saying the rosary. And people know, if they saw themselves on television now, because they probably did, saying this is a Catholic country, it's a shame. This film star has been invited here to Tralee. And like, she was harmless, like, you know. And she came all right, but the guards were involved in everything. The sergeant of the guards was called in by the bishop and told, stop this woman from coming to Tralee. They punctured her car over in Cast Island. When she came out of the chapel, her four wheels were flat. But the director of the band had to pick him up there. And they brought her in, and she was in the band, and she was interviewed outside the band, and like, and she had a couple of kids. She was raising them herself, she said, and she was, they won anyway. The show didn't go ahead. The band didn't come down to her. It was diverted by the cops again up the country somewhere, off on a by road. And
unbelievable
stuff that went on, and the power of the church had was unbelievable, like, you know. And the state cooperated with them then, like, because the guards were. And I think the priests that were involved in the debacle were transferred, because they didn't completely stop it, like, you know. Wow. But like, there was a lot of, you know, holy Josies, like, with Rosie was up and down inside the band, and Hail Mary, for the grace of the Lord is with thee. And like, sure, the girl was harmless, like. And the unfortunate thing about it was that when she went back to America after, about 3 weeks after, she was killed in a car crash in America. 3 weeks after going back from the Brandon Light, you know.
How heartbreaking is that?
It was heartbreaking, like, and like,
and she had kids.
She had three or four kids, like, you know. And she was wearing them herself, like, because she was a film star, but, like, I don't know the name of God, what was going on, but you know yourself, there was censorship, like, we couldn't watch certain films, we couldn't read certain books that were banned, the certain songs couldn't be sung because they were banned, there was no dances during Lent, it was banned.
Do you find so by having the plays that you could find your voice in some
sort? Yeah, John B was the man that opened up that, like, he had his own attack on the church, especially in the field, as you know, where they were pontificating about this man and the other thing. So John B was the first man to go with that. Mm. And
he's brave.
He was brave because he had a character in one of his letters. A fellow called Claude Lynn Hunter, who was he fancied nice boys, as they say. And like, I played that part in 19. If you play that part in the 60s, you'll be run out of town. You know, there was but like, we put it on in the 90s in the store, like, sure, they went down a bomb, and we took it to America, like, and sure, they took no more north of it, like, and first of all, he was looking for a nice girl around 20, and then he says, if you can't get a girl, what about a nice boy? And you know yourself now, like, it's a different situation now. We've opened up as a community, like, and it is. But anyway, that's how the players got going, and the writers followed in. And we said Tony Gerdon followed John B. When John B. passed away in 2002, and he wrote some plays. I was in the first one, was called Cuckoo Blue, and then he was followed by Christian O'Reilly, you know, whose play was on there last Sunday night. Like, here we are again, still drama group produced it, like, three people involved in it, a lovely play. He lived down there at the bottom of the hill. And you have so many writers in Arcady. Gabriel Fitzmaurice, you probably heard about him out in my van. Brilliant as well, like. Mm-hmm. And all those people, like, you contributed in a big way. Now, St. John's drama group, as the man said, they're still going. We had a meeting even last night, and we're going ahead with SIVE next year, because it's on the school curriculum next year, we'll say, for a leaving certificate.
Great idea.
Yeah, it is, yeah. So we're going ahead with that. I'm not in it anymore now because my acting career is awful. But it was that's going ahead next year, and we did some powerful plays like productions like one of our group, Bernie Daly, she produced The Kings of the Kilburn High Road, which was, you probably have seen, that was about the Irish in England during the 90s and the stuff going that in for them, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And they all got lost. They finished up. They went over as young boys and they were turned into old men, and, you know, it was sad, like, a sad play, but a great production as well, like, you know.
What was your favourite character out of all the plays that you...
I played Tomáshka and Sean Rood in Sive, like, in... It was, you know, people hated him, like, because he was the matchmaker trying to marry a young girl of 16 to an old man of 75, you know, that was the story, like, and he paid him money, like, money changed hands, you see. Like, it's in India, you know, today, like, the same thing is happening in India, like, in countries like that, you know, girls are sought off, like, and that was it. It happened in Ireland as well, you know, you might think, no, you're too young to be, you know, anything about that, but it happened in Ireland where they just had to... They didn't meet their husband until maybe a week before they got married. And
do you find it hard to portray characters like that?
No, because I lived through it, like, you know, sort of in the early 50s, like, you know. I was born in 41 and World War II was at its height at that stage. And I can remember the ration books, and you couldn't get tea or you couldn't get anything. You know, had coupons, and my father would be going to town, and my mother would give him, you can get so many coupons for a pound of butter, and it was cat out of it, like, it was a horrible time, like, and the war started, and then there was an economic war where we didn't get on with England, and we couldn't, De Valera wouldn't allow us sell the stuff to England, and as Brendan O'Connor said in his writing there last Sunday, we had our own Ayatollahs here in this country, he said. And he said that women were put down, like, you know. There was in the marriage ceremony, there was a line, women should be, a wife should be subject to her husband. Can you imagine? Can you imagine saying that now?
No.
Which was terrible, like. And, like, I remember we had to go to the right-hand side in Listowel when we were young, like, and the women had to go to the left-hand side. He ordered all the women had to wear headscarves going into church, like. That was Archbishop John McQuaid in Dublin, like. Women weren't allowed. There was no foxtrots allowed at dances, like. Slow dances, in case the people would be touching. They'd allow them Siege of Innis, all right, like, and wear them out, like, you know. And that was it. Tear them out, like. And there was a hall up there in Lurcomfall, then Paddy Andy's hall, like, and some... the parish priest would be there, the curate would be there every Sunday night at the door, watching in case the band would play a slow foxtrot. Wow. And as soon as they started up the music, he'd stop it. No touching, no close dancing, out.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable what went on, like, but you see, people were afraid of the clergy, they were afraid of the guards, they were afraid of the teachers, they were afraid of, because, you see, they didn't have second education that time, until that came along, and then it opened up, and you see what happened after that, and the abuse and all the things that came out, like. But it was a horrible time, like.
Find it hard so when you were a teacher?
I didn't actually enjoy the teaching for a long time, because I used to do plays with them inside the vocational school. We put on an old play, like, and we put on a concert, like, and we do the tops of the towns and all, like, and I got him interested in drama, like, and...
The teaching was in the way, was it?
To give me a due, the headmaster, Paddy Drummond, the Latimus, and he was a great man for that. He gave time off to do that, like, so for Christmas, though, like, we'd always put on a one act, and we'd go down to the plaza, and all the students would come down, like, we'd only do it for one night, like, but it was great, because it gave him another outlet, like, because it was constant... Grind, 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 like, you know.
And this is where you could really find yourself as well.
Yeah. And it was some of the students that I turned into producers, the directors themselves are players, like, you know. So, like, they got the bug, like. Once you get the bug, it's very hard. If you go up on stage at all, and in St. John's now, for instance, in Listowel, you have Christmas Shuttle doing youth theatre, and George Arden doing the children light, you know. And they're all on stage at a very young age. And they're meant for it. And that's basically...
So do you have to start young, do
you
think?
You do. Because, like, it's... Like, no, there are some drama groups around the country, like RTA Drama Group, like Hooper, and have a great production every year. But, like, they have a certain kind of a cast, like, and they're still there. And but a lot of the groups died out, like, you know, over the years. SD players, no, they were good. They died out, like, because, you see, there was immigration. They couldn't fill the gap, like, you know. Mm. Whereas the store, there was always a stream along coming, like. And you still will have it now. Every year there'd be two or three productions from the young people, like, and then Writers' Week came along, and you know yourself there, what happened there. The rest is history after that, because it was a showcase, like, for our own writers as well, you know. John B's plays were put on, and the place was packed. And we'd say, Brian McMahon and his plays were put on, and the place was mobbed again. So it was great times, actually.
So from the idea of when you decide what play you want to it being on stage, how long does the process take?
The process takes about, I said, they've got some 4 months anyway, like, between rehearsals and all, like, and you're given the script, like, in, we'd say, if we're putting on the play in November, you're given the script in, mid-July. And you'll call them together then in August, like, and you'll pick the cast, like, you know. Mm. Sometimes you'd have to disappoint people because there wouldn't be a part for everybody. But there'd be work to be done, like stage, around the stage, putting up the stage, construction, the set and all this kind of thing, lighting, sound, all those things had to be done.
So there was a role for everyone.
There was a role for everybody if they were prepared to wait. Mm. And they got that chance then after maybe the next play, they got a part, you know. Mm. And the other people stood back then, like, you know. So it was, there was a great camaraderie among the groups like that time. Mm. And they borrowed from one another, one group borrowed from the other group. If they thought they were shot, is anybody who could recommend they could play this part, you know.
Yeah.
It was great, like, and that's why, so, the store was the hub of drama, like, it was really.
What did you learn from it?
What I learned from it was that... You meet so many people, that's number one, like, and you start up so many friendships, like, that was important. And it was, what I learned from it then was, the lessons that you learned from it was, you know, you can have a bit of fun as well, but you can also teach people, even putting on a play, there's a certain amount of teaching involved as well, you know.
Yeah.
Now, being a teacher, because the days of teaching now has changed completely, like it is in our days. There was no, it was all chalk and talk. there was no iPads or no anything like that. Like, and it is a dangerous situation now. Like, and when you go home from school now, you could be up on Facebook 5 minutes after, you know, and like that's the danger about it. Like, it is a horrible situation. But anyway, as the man said, we didn't have that. So I spent 37 years in the vocational school in LaSalle. And 1998, as the man said, the big C happened. So I said, look, there were various consultants saying, you have 3 years, you have 5 years, and should have. That's 28 years ago.
Do you find that because you put a lot of time into the plays and stuff, it was a healthy distraction for you?
It was, yeah, it was. And like, and even I go to, I sit in at all the rehearsals now, like, just to get out and be part of it, like. Mm. But it was, I was on stage up to 2 years ago, like, you know, so.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
So you were told, you know, you only had like a handful of years and then you were still on stage.
Yeah.
Up to 2 years ago.
Yeah. And like, I remember as a distraction that I joined the Ballybunion Golf Club and like just for the track. I was captain then in 2012, like, you know, so.
Unbelievable.
I don't play anymore now because they're not able, but it was like I have spent a great 28 years getting a pension, getting a pension from the Department of Education. But like, the drama kept me going differently, only for that. I was a goner, I'd say. I wouldn't, You can't sit at home after getting a diagnosis like that. You have to find some outlet, otherwise you'll be in trouble, like, you know. So, I mean, I have pity for those young people dying every second day. And even there in the store a couple of weeks ago, we buried a young girl who was only 41, you know. And David O'Brien, he was only 50-something. And, like, their whole life was in front of them, but should they're dead now. And, like, it was horrible. It is a horrible diagnosis to get, but most families are hit by it. And I got involved in with fundraising for the hospice, and myself and John Crohan and the golf club in Ballyburn, and we raised 200,000 for the hospice, like, you know.
Unbelievable. So,
and they gave us an award. And when they start giving you an award, they must be thinking, he's not going to live long more. So we better give him an award now. We knit it to Lee, and we got a plaque and a medal, and they were delighted. And I still support the hospice big time. And I also support the Kerry parents and friends and the multiple sclerosis. I collect for them in the square and the store. Everything, there's a collection.
Wow. So it's a real community spirit.
I'd be like that, I suppose. I don't know what I'd be called, but I have to get out and do something. And, like, you know, at the end of the day, money is not, you can't take it with you anyway, that's number one. Mm-hmm. You need a certain amount of it now. Don't get me wrong. There's no point. But, like, if some people are, you know, their whole life is obsessed with making money and buying houses and buying land, and I wouldn't be
being
like that.
Being happy is the main thing, isn't it?
Being happy is the main thing. I wouldn't be like that anymore. But it's basically the players that kept me going. And with all the writers that have come along now, Christian O'Reilly now, like, he lives in Galway now, but he's been written a number of plays, and his play was put on and produced by Listowel, Lady Imelda Dowling last Sunday night, Friday, Saturday and Sunday night in packed houses in Listowel. Mm-hmm. Drama group put it on, like, you know. And it's great to give an outlet to the local writers, like, mm-hmm. because George Fitzmaurice was the first one in the war, like. And then you had Maurice Welsh in out there in Lizelton, and you had, then along came Brian McMahon, John B, Tony Gern, Christian O'Reilly, you know, all them, like.
Were you ever tempted to write your own play?
I was tempted to write, and somebody said to me, you should write a book, but you know, I'm lazy to do that. But I could write a play, but to be kind of awkward. But I don't know. I have certain ideas, but there's a certain skill about writing plays, and you need that, and I don't have it. The man said,
you've the acting skills.
I don't have the skill to write a play. I'm convinced I don't. But I could write. Everyone can write a book. You could write a book about your own life. Everyone can write a book about their own life, and I could write it as well. But it's tedious, like, and sure, everyone has a life story.
Mm. Where to start?
Yeah, where to start? Yeah. And, like, I can still go back and remember the day, my first day in National School. And that's a memory, like, as 4.5 years of age, I was going up to a field, and a farmer's dog ran out and he bit me in the calf of the leg.
Oh my God, that's an awful start.
My first day. And when I arrived up at the school, there was a teacher there called Mrs. Susie. She took out a biscuit tin and she pulled out a bottle of Dettol and a piece of cotton wool and dabbed. That was it. There was no tetanus injection and that.
Oh my God.
And I still have the mark in my leg.
Yeah, you definitely won't forget that day.
Yeah, but, like, and the teacher brought me up to the team, myself and the brother, to sing a song. My uncle had taught us McNamara's band. Oh, my name is McNamara. I'm the leader of the band. And she gave us a trepanny bit each. You know, the ones with the 6 or 7 sides in it. We arrived home with trepanny, like, well, the first day at school. That was a good innings, like. But anyway, it was, I enjoyed. Basically, the National School was okay, but I was in St. Michael's and I didn't enjoy that at all. Like, there was a reign of terror there that time. In St. Michael's on the store, it was horrible. Teachers punching students and beating them and everything.
Not nice.
Not nice at all. Like, and physical violence was wicked. I remember being out of the blackboard one day and I couldn't understand 3 of them, 29. I hadn't a clue what it was about. Trigonometry. And this certain teacher hit me, belt anyway, fist into the side of the head, like, and I fell against the blackboard, and the blackboard fell down top of me.
Oh, you crazy.
But he got away with it, but, like, you wouldn't get away with it now. Like, you know, you wouldn't get away with it now. And rightly so. The kids that go to school now should be happy, like, and they are happy, like. Mm-hmm. They have school meals and everything. They have everything, like, now. And they're still complaining, like. Mm-hmm. People are still complaining. We have a great little country. When you look at what's going on around the world, like, we have a great country here.
Yeah. And we're safe.
We're safe. At the moment, we're safe. I mean, what's going on in America, like, and look at all what's going on in Gaza, like, and children have been blown to bits, like, and Iran, the same thing now. And there's no stopping them, like, knocking down buildings that were there after building them up a couple of years ago and flattening them again, like. Mm. This is going to go on and go on and go on. We're lucky. We're safe. And we have a reasonably happy life, and there's no violence in the country at the moment, like, and thanks be to God for that. Like, you know, it has stopped. Like, the bombing has stopped. Mm-hmm. And we have a certain amount of peace.
But it's been fantastic to talk to you. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that you've obviously been connected with over the years, and I think they'll all have a lovely thing to say about you. But I suppose you and acting and just getting involved with the community, you know, there's not a lot of people that have put a lot of time into that, but you did. So well done for everything you've done.
Yeah, but it's like, I suppose it really, we go into John B's on a Tuesday night, like, and we do pop theatre. John B'd be there himself sitting at the bottom of the stairs, like, you know, and we doing parts of his plays, like, you know, and we did Many a Minute 28 was about immigration. John B sang the song himself, like, in the play. Many a Minute 20 said goodbye to the railway station in Listowel was the start off point for people going to America, going to England on a Monday morning. It was horrible, like. There was 10 or 12 or 14 people above at the railway station going to England, and some of them never came back. Yeah. Never came back. It was Holyhead, Dundera to Holyhead, Holyhead to Euston Station, and then
that was it.
You met somebody over. Maybe you had a brother or a sister, an uncle or an aunt that might help you, but some came back and pretended they had money for the summer holiday, but they didn't have it. But they put on a show anyway. But, like, it was, some of them did well and more of them didn't. That's what happened.
Before I leave you go, can you remember your favourite line?
My favourite line in the play?
Yeah.
I suppose it was about love, actually. I suppose your man, Tomáshin Sean Rowe, was trying to coax Mina into letting the young lady marry the old man, and he said, what do you know about love? He says, does your husband run to when he comes into the bog and throw his arms around you and give you a big smile, give a kiss? Could you ever say now that he brought you a token of a brooch or a bit of finery, probably a few pence worth of mushy sweets, when he was drunk on a fair day, and to hear you blathering about love? He said, wouldn't you think he was out of his mind if he put his hands around you in the public road?
Just like that.
Just like that.
Thank you so much, Bat.
Do you want a cup of tea?
I'm all right. I'm